It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning, America, and happy Thanksgiving week. It's great to be here. My name is J. Christian Adams. I am subbing for Sandy Rios this Thanksgiving week, and I'm very thankful for that. Very thankful to spend this hour with you all across the nation. I'm the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, as the only nonprofit charity public interest law firm dedicated to election integrity, fighting voter fraud. Some of us have met way back a long time ago when I was at the Justice Department. I worked on that new Black Panther case in Philadelphia. Since then, I've been on Fox a lot. You may have read some of the things I've written, and I am so happy to join you this morning, whether you're traveling to see family, whether you still will have a couple more days of work, or you're just thinking about what your kitchen is going to look like in 48 hours. It's great to be here with you, and I wonder what you're thankful for. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, and a lot of you had a lot of great things you were thankful for. I appreciate you all the callers and all the great ideas. But one of the things I think that all of us are thankful for this year and every year is the country that we live in. And I pose the question, what makes this country so great? What is it? Is it the money that we have? Is it the cities that we've built? Is it the music that we've made and exported all around the world, or is it something else? Is it the fact that we live in a country that is governed by a constitution that reflects natural law, that reflects the dignity of the human person, is written down, and really is about the best blueprint that anybody's ever come up with to run a country? It's lasted longer than any other constitution, any other form of government. Think about that. It's lasted longer than any other constitution. And I will tell you from here in the confines of the Beltway that it is under continuous assault by bureaucrats, by elites, by professors. And I don't think that it's ever been under the degree of assault that it is now in 2019 in any of your lifetimes. You'd have to probably live, which nobody has, 160 years since we faced a constitution under such assault. As a matter of fact, the people who teach the law are now openly hostile to the law. Google Georgetown law professor, get rid of constitution, Washington Post editorial. They're open about it. They don't care that we think they're crazy. Crazy is what is their currency. It's what gives them their brand. The crazier they are, the more elite the law schools they get to teach. But there's one particular attack on the Constitution that I think is more dangerous than all of them. And that is the attack on how we elect the president. The attack, you ask, what are you talking about, Christian Adams? We need Sandy Rios back, right? No. Sandy understands this too. The Constitution is under attack where we elect the president. Now, let's go through this very carefully. We're going to have some great guests on this hour to talk about it and bring you up to speed about what's happening on what might be the biggest threat to our Constitution right now. And it's happening under the surface. Subterranean attack, if you will. And that is a threat to the Electoral College. Now, let's do a brief Schoolhouse Rock moment, if we will. Those of you old enough to remember Schoolhouse Rock. And for those of you who are under the age of 40, there was a time when the networks A, actually broadcast cartoons on Saturday morning, and B, actually taught you basic civics. Yes, believe it or not. Of course, those days are long gone, where the networks are now fully engaged in undermining basic civics. But there was a time where that was different. And we elect the president in this country not by direct popular vote. Shock. Well, wait a minute. Why don't we do that, Mr. Adams? Wouldn't that be the better way to go? Folks, the founders of this country recognize that when you have elections like that, it leads to tumult and disorder. When you have direct democracy, 51% of the people end up voting to take away the rights of the other 49%. Democracies end in bloodshed. I do not overstate. It becomes mob rule. And the founders knew this because they knew their history. And so when it came to electing the president, they designed something called the Electoral College. The Electoral College might be a quaint thing you don't think too much about, but in some states when you go to vote for president, you see on the ballot the names of the electors. You're actually voting for the electors who meet in the Electoral College. Now, why on earth would the founders of our country come up with such a crazy scheme? Something that the left and law professors now call anti-democratic. Yeah, that's right. It is. It's anti-democratic by design. And the reason they came up with this is because they wanted the president of the United States to represent the states and represent all of the states across the country. If we did not have the Electoral College, let's take a look at how the president would be elected. The president would be elected by getting the votes in New York City, Philadelphia, Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Portland, Oregon. We can throw Boston in there for good measure. That's who would be electing the president of the United States. And let me tell you a little secret about those places. They vote as a big monolithic block. They don't have diversity in election results in Philadelphia. Los Angeles doesn't split their vote. And because of the density of those places, presidential campaigns can park in those cities and buy the airwaves. Oh, and for good measure, places like Philadelphia are one-party rule when it comes to running the election. I have done election coverage when I was an attorney at the voting section of the Justice Department in Philadelphia that would boggle your mind. That some polling places are in private homes in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, the election officials who run that precinct are also on the ballot. And you would not believe the things they will say to voters when they're going to vote. We do not want Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, San Francisco, and Chicago picking our president. The founders wanted a broad cross-section of America to represent the president. That's why Donald Trump had to win the South and the Upper Midwest. That's why Hillary had to win the coasts and the Upper Midwest. The difference being that only Donald Trump won the Upper Midwest. But getting rid of the Electoral College will mean you don't have to worry about the people listening to this show. That's what direct democracy, that's what national popular vote does. So, wait a minute, I thought it was in the Constitution, Mr. Adams. They can't change that, can they? It's right there in the Constitution. You're right. But like everything else the left does, they find a way to destroy and sneak and cook up schemes to get past the Constitution. And they're doing it with something called national popular vote. Let me tell you what it is. National popular vote is a compact of the states on the coasts, largely, and Illinois, to ignore the Constitution, to say we're going to cast our electoral votes, because remember, every state gets this number of electoral votes, the number of House members and two senators. So Wyoming gets three electoral votes. The compact says that we will cast our electoral votes for whoever wins the national popular vote. We'll just ignore what the voters of our state say, and we will cast our ballots in the Electoral College for whoever wins the national popular vote. Guess what? Hillary Clinton would be the president of the United States today if this were in place. Oh, we have just gotten to the heart of the matter, haven't we? We have just figured out, haven't we, why it is that this movement is taking place. You got it. It is because George Bush would not have been president, Al Gore would have, and Donald Trump would not have been president, Hillary Clinton would have. And that has animated and triggered the left. They don't like the constitutional structure. But Mr. Adams, shouldn't whoever gets the most votes wins? No, actually not. This is an area that was deliberated at the Constitutional Convention in great detail. Again, you are supposed to be representing all of the states when you're president of the United States. The president represents sovereign states. The states create the president. It is not a democratic institution. It was never meant to be. If you want it to be, then amend the Constitution. Oops, I forgot the left can't do that because they don't have enough support to do that. You need a lot of support in the states to amend the Constitution. And there's no way Wyoming and South Dakota and South Carolina and Mississippi are going to give up the clout that they have in the Electoral College and give it to San Francisco. So here we are with the National Popular Vote Movement. But Mr. Adams, this is pie in the sky, right? This is crazy. Nobody will ever buy that. Oh, whoa. Go look at the scoreboard, friends. Go look at what's happening. It is marching through state legislatures. California, Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Illinois, Hawaii. It is marching through state legislatures, and it comes alive like Frankenstein's monster when 270 electoral votes from the states sign on. Well, they're not there yet, but they're getting close. They're in the 190s, depending on how you view something that happened in Nevada. So this thing comes alive once you reach 270 electoral votes. Targets: Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. And it almost passed, friends, in Georgia and Arizona because the people behind National Popular Vote are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars to trick Republican legislators. That's right. It can't pass without turncoats. But they're doing their best to pay off turncoats to get this thing to pass in red states. And the guest I had on yesterday, Hans von Spakovsky, was largely responsible for stopping it in the state of Georgia. So when I called him an American hero yesterday, that's one of the things I meant. So you might ask, well, where in the world are they going to get their next states? Folks, they are working hard to do it. And when they do this, it is lights out. The Union of 1789 is dissolved. It is an 1860 moment. It will be a group of mostly liberal states and one or two turncoat states to have rejected the Constitution and come up with a new way to elect the president that the founders rejected. We're going to talk about that this hour. I've got two experts coming on, John Ryder, Trent England. They've been working this issue for a long time. Folks, you really got to stay with us because John Ryder and Trent can describe the threat to you. My name is J. Christian Adams, in for Sandy Rios. We also want to take your calls at 1-888-589-8840. In for Sandy Rios this morning on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I am currently reading a book titled 1776 by David McCullough. I would highly recommend this book about our country's founding. It's been on my to-do list for 10 years, and I finally got around to it. But an excellent book it is, and a lot of it's about the life of George Washington. What an amazing story. Without George Washington, I doubt I would be talking to you today. That's how instrumental and important he was to our country's founding. He was a man used by God. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon, his home, on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. Our tours in June and September, Spiritual Heritage Tours, to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, that's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Scott Angell, Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. He works to improve safety and ensure environmental protection in the offshore natural gas and oil industry. Psalm 95:5 reminds us why we protect the earth and sea. They are God's creation. The sea is His, for He made it, and His hands form the dry land. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Scott Angell as he works to protect Americans and our environment. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. This Christmas season, send a prayer or Christmas greeting to President Trump and his family. Your message will be delivered straight to the Oval Office. It's fun, easy, and it's free. Learn how at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
The state of Maryland has become ground zero in the war over illegal immigration. In recent months, nearly a dozen women and girls have been assaulted by illegals in Montgomery County, a so-called sanctuary county. Now comes word that Montgomery County and Prince George County may soon release six illegals who are accused of violent crimes against children. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says county leaders have chosen politics over public safety. In May, Prince George County officials released MS-13 gang members instead of turning them over to ICE agents. After the men were turned loose, they murdered a 14-year-old girl. Several months ago, I came under attack by the National Association of Hispanic Journalists because I said we had been invaded by illegals. And yet, when illegals murder a 14-year-old American child, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists was silent. I'm Todd Stern.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning, America. This is J. Christian Adams. It is a delight to be here this Thanksgiving week. Wonder what you're thankful for. We're talking about the Constitution. That's one of the things I am thankful for this year, this time of year. It's a wonderful document that protects our liberties in so many ways. We're talking about, though, one of the most imminent threats to the Constitution, which is something called the National Popular Vote Movement. It's a Soros-seeded, big left, big money designed to undermine our Constitution, and it's coming to a state near you, if it hasn't already. You can call us at 1-888-589-8840 to join the conversation this hour. This, folks, I'm telling you, this is a dissolution of the union. I said that in the last segment, that if we change the way we elect the president, we are dissolving the union. It's that simple. I'm joined now by my friend John Ryder. John is an attorney down in Tennessee. Good morning, John. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you doing this morning?
Just great.
Well, I'm glad you're here, John.
Tennessee.
Indeed. I got the weather report from that part of the world, and it's a lot warmer than it is in Washington this morning. John, why don't you introduce yourself briefly to all of our listeners across the country?
Well, I've been working in the area of election law and related issues for a number of decades, and most recently served as general counsel to the Republican National Committee, and then as chairman of the Republican National Lawyers Association. And I've taught election law at Vanderbilt University School of Law, and have lectured on election law topics in a number of locations and for a number of organizations. You know, you're talking about the national popular vote. I have debated this issue a number of times, and it's a pernicious concept, and I think you're quite right to be alarmed by it.
If you could, you know, a lot of folks out there listening are hearing about the effort to undo the Constitution for the first time listening to the show today. And if you could explain to them how it is that it got so much traction and how they've been able to pull this off and get so close without a lot of attention.
Well, this all started after the 2000 election between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and in that election, as we all know, George Bush won the electoral vote, and Al Gore received a plurality of the popular vote, and some liberals decided that that was a bad thing, and came up with a plan to do away with the Electoral College. There have been many attempts over the years to abolish the Electoral College using the amendment process under Article 5 of the Constitution, but all of those have failed. And so the new plan, which you have to give them credit, it's very creative, is to create an interstate compact, a contract among states, which would bind the electors from the member states to the winner of the national popular vote. And so what that means in 2000, what that would have meant is that the 11 electoral votes from Tennessee, which was carried by George Bush, would have gone to Al Gore. In 2016, even though Donald Trump received more than 60% of the vote in Tennessee, the votes of Tennesseans would have been cast in favor of Hillary Clinton. So that's the concept. And the way they've gone about it is gone through legislature by legislature, state by state, passing resolutions joining that state into the compact. And they started with what for the liberals are the easy states, Maryland, Illinois, Massachusetts, Hawaii. They got a big lift when they got California. And the momentum has about stopped there. They're at a little more than half of the 270 electoral votes they need. And by that I mean the compact, by its own terms, doesn't take effect until states having 270 electoral votes have joined into the process, into the contract. And 270, as we know, is that's the magic number. That's the number it takes
right
to win the presidency.
You know, I'm going to ask you the hardest question of all, but I left Baltimore off my list. In the first segment, I was describing how we would be electing our president from New York, Boston, Chicago, Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, Los Angeles. And I should have mentioned Baltimore because it might even be a scarier prospect than some of those cities. John, let me ask you the hardest question of all. a lot of people listening are going to say, hey, I grew up learning that majority rules, that whoever gets the most votes ought to win. And why isn't that the case when it comes to electing our president?
You know, that is the key question here. We've been so inculcated with the concept that democracy means majority rule. And it doesn't. It doesn't in every country today. It hasn't throughout the history of the world. We live in a republic that is a complex, compound federal republic, a republic that is made up of different parts and diffuse centers of power. We have states and we have the federal government. We have three branches of government. In the legislative branch, we have two different houses. We have the House and the Senate. And the Electoral College mirrors and reflects that complex, compound federal Republican architecture of our government. The representation in the Congress of the United States, as we all would remember from our high school civics course, at least back when they used to teach high school civics, made clear that the bicameral nature of the Congress.
And when you mean bicameral, John, you mean bicameral, you mean there's a House and Senate, right?
House and a Senate. And that was a result of a great compromise at the Constitutional Convention between the big states and the small states. The small states wanted the legislative branch to be based on states. Each state would have equal representation, as we presently do in the Senate. The large states said, oh, no, it needs to be based on population because they were large. So Virginia and New York and Massachusetts liked the idea of the House of Representatives, and only one House. The compromise was to have one House based on population, the House of Representatives, one based on states, the Senate. And so that reflects that tension and that difference between popular representation and state representation.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Electoral College just incorporates that because the electoral votes of each state are based on their representation in the Congress. They get the same number of members that they have in the House plus the two members they have in the Senate.
If I were to pull somebody out of a law school class at Harvard Law School, or even worse, a professor there, they might ask you something like this. Well, isn't that just a vestige from a time gone by? And we're now a new and different country that's diverse and deserves to cast off the shackles of this patriarchal, oppressive scheme that marginalizes people of color and have a direct democracy. I mean, what do you say to the people who are willing to throw out the whole system? Why stop? Why slow down?
Well, and that precisely what would happen. Why stop is then you start, the next move would be to abolish the Senate and go to proportional representation in the House on a nationwide basis.
And let's be clear so the listeners understand this. We're not coming up with crazy things that nobody's talking about, are we? I mean, this is stuff that's floating out there, isn't it?
No, it absolutely is. I can pull up a half a dozen law review articles right now that reflect the views of the professoriate, as you described it, on this subject. But here's the point. The country has changed. We are not the same country we were 220 years ago. But the fundamental problems of government remain exactly the same. Instead now of, well, it's not instead. We still have big states and we have small states. We have states like California and New York, which are very large. We have smaller states like Tennessee or South Dakota, which are not so large. Now, the 2016 election, I think, is the perfect illustration of the virtue and the value of the Electoral College, because while Hillary Clinton won a plurality of votes, That plurality is based entirely on her margin of victory in the state of California. And the voters in California do not necessarily share the values and policy preferences of the voters in Tennessee or Missouri or South Dakota or Indiana. And those views, so this federal complex compound system accommodates the views of both by embedding the fundamental compromise of Congress into the method for selecting the president.
I'm J. Christian Adams in for Sandy Rios on American Family Radio. We're joined today by John Ryder. He's an election attorney, former RNC counsel, head of the Republican National Lawyers Association. We're talking about the latest threat to our Constitution that has been cooked up by the extremists on the left, and that's to change how we elect the president by getting rid of the Electoral College. They don't like it. They don't like Donald Trump. They don't like George W. Bush. They don't like the founders. They don't like our Constitution, folks. And one of the things when I come on Sandy's show, I like to try to do is tell you what the foes of the Constitution are up to, because you get to live in the real world. You get to not have to cross paths with this stuff as frequently as John and I do. But it's important that you understand the enemy, the people who are trying to shall we say, fundamentally transform the United States. John, what's next for them? I mean, do they have to get some red states to pull this off?
Absolutely. And they're working overtime to do that. You know, as you mentioned, it's coming to a state near you. And in fact, we've had a couple of efforts in Tennessee, in the Tennessee legislature, to pass legislation that would join Tennessee to the National Popular Vote Compact. Both times it was defeated. Oklahoma, Arizona, all of these states have been targets of efforts to join NPV. So they have to get to 270 electoral votes in the membership in the NPV. And once that happens, then those states' votes will determine the outcome of the presidency, and the other states will not matter.
The other states will not matter, and I think that's the important part. When you went through the virtues of the Electoral College, and you had large states, small states, and so forth, one of the things that I was struck by is the importance. You said something very profound. You said the years have changed, but some of the fundamental differences have remained. We still have large states and small states. We still have a large city mercantile class and a rural agricultural class, don't we? We still have that same dynamic that existed in 1789 that has to have the president reflect both.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, the big political battles in 1789 were between, you know, the coastal towns, whether it was Savannah and Charleston and Boston and New York, and the hinterland, places like Harrisburg or upcountry Virginia or the upcountry of the Carolinas. Today you have the same issues. The coasts have different policy preferences, different values from the interior of the United States. The urban-rural divide is profound. Every poll that is done on this subject reveals a deepening division between urban and rural, and particularly between the coasts and the interior.
And that's exactly
NPV,
why we...
The Electoral College protects the interior from being steamrolled by the coasts.
Thank you very much, John Ryder, for joining us. I'm J. Christian Adams in for Sandy Rios. The Electoral College under attack, the Constitution under attack, everywhere we look. Happy Thanksgiving 2019. I'll be back with Trent England next to talk more about why the Constitution still matters on Sandy Rios in the Morning, American Family Radio.
They not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The District 211 School Board in Palatine, Illinois, voted in a 5-2 decision to allow biological males into the female locker room at Palatine High School. The board said that all students should be treated and supported in a manner consistent with their gender identity. This support apparently necessitates obliterating the privacy and safety of every girl at the school. If you support forcing scared and humiliated young girls to change in front of boys, please don't pretend to care about women's rights, especially women's privacy rights. You are an enemy of women, not a supporter.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hey, babe, I just finished up the Christmas list for the kids.
Cool. Just make sure you check out AFA's Naughty or Nice list to see what stores to avoid.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's showing that Walgreens is naughty.
Let me see. I see Walmart is still good.
Oh, but Walmart is always crowded.
Just think about the kids, babe.
Think about the kids, babe. You're no help.
Find the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list at afa.net.
I started reading the Bible in September of 1976 after I got home from that internship. I came across David's Psalm 63, which had an impact on me, and it still does to this day. I began to pray, God, if you're real, show me what you showed him. On December 22nd of 1976, as an old song says, I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. According to Scripture, God established civil government to maintain justice so citizens would not have to take matters into their own hands. So what happens when government refuses to do its job? Take a look at Oklahoma, where Republicans have abandoned the party's historic commitment to the rule of law and embraced the foolish rush to give early release to dangerous criminals. On one day, November 4, Oklahoma released 462 felons convicted of drug crimes and theft. There's a reason the crime rate in the United States has plummeted in the last two decades. The bad guys have been locked up in record numbers. Out of a misplaced sense of compassion, bad guys in record numbers are now being loosed back into a society that had to lock them up for its own protection. What will happen? I'm afraid Oklahoma is about to find out.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One of President Trump's closest foreign allies is undergoing a similar form of political warfare dressed up as a prosecution and with a similar object, namely removing him from power. The parallels between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's travails and those of his American counterpart are striking. Both men have proven to be formidable candidates, frustrating rivals at the polls and prompting such foes to use politicized investigations and judicial proceedings to try to defeat their respective nation's leaders. Donald Trump has strenuously challenged the successive witch hunts against him, and Bibi has vehemently denied the corruption charges filed against him yesterday. Ultimately, it will probably be up to the voters in both countries whether these powerful leaders will continue to serve. But we should be under no illusion about the politicized and highly problematic investigations that seem designed to influence them. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning, America. It is not Sandy Rios. It is J. Christian Adams in for Sandy Rios today. I'm the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, dedicated to fighting voter fraud and supporting election integrity and the way the elections were designed to actually operate. And this morning, we are talking about one of the biggest threats possible to our Constitution, to the existence of the United States. I said it. The existence of the United States is at risk. Remember, the United States would not exist today if it were not for the compromise of 1787 that led to the Electoral College, how we elect the president. If you had tried to get a national popular vote in 1789, it would have been rejected by the founders for very good reasons that we have talked about in the last two segments. I want to get your calls at 1-888-589-8840 to talk about this dire threat to our Constitution. Our next guest, Trent England. Trent is the director of the Save Our States Project. You might ask, well, surely all of the forces of good are on the side of opposing the national popular vote. Well, that's sort of true, but the forces of good are dwarfed. And that's why it's an honor to have Trent on this morning. Trent, good morning.
Good morning, Christian. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thanks for being here, Trent. We just had John Ryder on talking about sort of the mechanics of the national popular vote movement. I set it up earlier in the show that the effort to get rid of the Electoral College is essentially an effort to get rid of the Constitution. And the threat is that real. Is that real? I want to sort of ask you some questions about how this comes from, where this comes from, because I think a lot of people out there listening are just sort of overwhelmed by all the new and devious ways that our institutions are under attack, whether it's, you know, the family, whether it's schools, whether it's education, whether it's free speech, free exercise of religion. We can go down the list and do lots of shows over very different issues. But I'd like to ask you today about the national popular vote movement organization. Who drives this? I mean, does this stuff just fall out of the sky, or is there money and power behind it, Trent?
Yeah, that's a great question, Christian, because, you know, there are lots of bad ideas on the left, and we always have to be, you know, sort of doing triage on what it is that they're really serious about and, you know, what it is that that maybe we don't have to worry so much about. And for a long time, you know, there were folks on the left who would rail against the Electoral College, but didn't really have a plan to do anything. And that changed in 2006 when this National Popular Vote campaign was launched to push this National Popular Vote compact. And the real game changer, the compact was written by a couple of liberal law professors, but liberal law professors have lots of bad ideas, right? That's not news. What changed was that they found this guy named John Koza who actually invented the scratch-off lottery ticket. Back in the 1970s, he invented the scratch-off lottery ticket, he patented it, and then he spent the 1980s going around lobbying states to adopt the scratch-off lottery, claiming that it was going to fund their solve their education funding problems. Of course, you know, that didn't really happen, but it certainly solved this guy's funding problems. And so John Koza, who is the guy behind the lottery, is now the guy who is funding and really driving himself this effort to nullify the Electoral College and, as you said, nullify the Constitution through this National Popular Vote campaign and this National Popular Vote compact. And, I mean, it is millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars they're spending to do this, which, you know, when you're lobbying in state capitals, that's real money. That might, you know, that might not be, that might just be kind of an average amount of money in Washington, D.C. for lobbying, but in state capitals, it's a huge sum, and they spend it lavishly to, you know, basically buy off Republican state legislators in our states.
Do you hear that, folks? I mean, it's ironic, it's sort of funny, and ultimately terribly sad. This effort to undermine our Constitution by getting rid of the Electoral College has its genesis in one of the greatest civic institutions in America, the scratch-off lottery ticket, right? The bringer of happiness and joy to so many American households, the scratch-off lottery ticket. That's just amazing that's what, you know, there's always these weird threads between these sinister efforts to undo our system and our institutions. Trent, let me ask you this. How in the world is it that they've had any success at all with Republicans? And can you talk about specific examples where this effort to get rid of our Constitution and the way we elect the president has gotten traction among Republicans?
Well, you know, to sort of push the metaphor here, I mean, what do lotteries rely on, right? Lotteries rely on people, on the triumph of hope over math, right? People's inability to really do the math. And, you know, and so with this sort of false hope, they go out and they buy a lottery ticket. And this whole lobbying campaign for national popular vote is basically motivated by the same thing. They go out to Republican legislators and they say, no, ignore the fact that we have these huge cities out there that, you know, if you just sit down and you do the math, obviously the cities would become much more dominant in any kind of a national popular vote scenario. But they go to these Republicans and they sell them this false hope that, oh, well, you know, maybe your endorsement as a state legislator would matter more as a presidential candidate. Maybe your consultants would make more money. Maybe your newspaper would make more money in advertising if we change the rules for presidential elections. And, oh, by the way, we'll take you on vacation to Hawaii and wine and dine you, and you can have a really good time, quote-unquote, learning about national popular vote. And, you
and
know,
that actually happens.
It happens all the time. I mean, it happens. I mean, legislators in Arizona, Oklahoma, Michigan, Georgia, I mean, all across the country, we've seen legislators taken on these junkets, Nebraska, Utah, by national popular vote. And, you know, and national popular vote, they've hired a handful of former Republicans, a state senator from California, former Republican state senator from California named Ray Haynes is one of their lobbyists. The former chairman of the Michigan Republican Party, Saul Anuzes, is really, I think, the top lobbyist for national popular vote. And, you know, these guys kind of make friends with state legislators and then whisper in their ear, oh, you know, this is going to, you know, maybe help Republicans win elections, and nobody really understands the Electoral College anyway, so why not just change it and you know, into this simple system, the simple French-style system, and walk away from what the founders gave us.
I don't like anything that's a French style. You're listening to Sandy Rios in the Morning. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm in for Sandy this week of Thanksgiving. And we're talking about an effort to undermine our Constitution, to get rid of our Constitution through the National Popular Vote Compact. And I want to go to Jane. First of all, I want to take your calls at 888-589-8840. Jane in Oregon, Trent, has a very interesting benefit, I think, to having the Electoral College. Good morning, Jane. What do you have to say?
Well, I live in Oregon. And in Oregon, you have to register 6 months ahead in order to vote here. And I get, imagine this to stop just what I think is happening in California to a large degree. Because one time I was there on voting day when I had not voted in my home state. And I thought, well, I'll just go down and see if they'll let me vote, because I should vote. I filled out a card. It was probably a little bigger than 5x7. And that's not much information.
And you were able to vote in California?
Yeah.
And Trent, so what does the Electoral College do when it comes to voter fraud? Does it sort of cabbage it or hide it or pigeonhole it?
Yeah, the Electoral College uses state lines like the watertight compartments on an ocean liner, right? They learned after the Titanic sunk that one of the things that you need to do when you build a big ship that goes out in rough seas is you need to have these compartments within the ship where, you know, if you hit an iceberg on the front, you can seal off those compartments, and then, you know, you may have a few parts of the ship that fill up with water, but the whole thing can stay afloat. And the Electoral College does that, right? If you have California with these crazy election laws that are basically designed to guarantee election fraud, at least it's contained within California. In a national popular vote system, that would leak out, and a stolen vote in L.A. County could directly, you know, countervail a legitimate vote anywhere in the rest of the country. And yet, if you don't live in California, you have no say, you have no vote, No elected official who has any oversight, right? So now the Electoral College is really the thing that keeps elections locked down at the state level and prevents voter fraud from being nationalized and prevents people like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders who are pushing these terrible ideas that California uses right now. They're pushing those at the national level. They need to get rid of the Electoral College so that they can then have, you know, then the federal government would have to take over how elections are run.
And don't forget, that is the
California ideas pushed up.
Right. That's the big goal here, is the left wants the federal government to take over elections. I've been writing about that for years. That's their utopian dream. And, you know, one of the problems with California, as well as other states, is there's absolutely no controls on elections. Elections in Philadelphia are run like a free-for-all, like you've never seen in your life. We're taking your calls talking about the national popular vote effort to undo the Constitution and how it elects the president. We would have President Hillary. We would have President Gore, except for the Electoral College, and that's why they hate it. Mark is in Virginia. Mark, what do you have to say?
Yes, good morning. One question I have, I wonder your thoughts on. I know a couple of states actually split their electoral votes. I think Nebraska is one and maybe Maine is the other. And just wondering how that may have an effect on this as well, where it doesn't go where the state's entire electoral vote goes to one candidate.
How about that, Trent?
Yeah, so the founders wanted this flexibility for states so that legislatures could determine how best to represent their states in the system. So, you know, this to James Madison was a great benefit of the system. We let states experiment a little bit. And, you know, and Maine and Nebraska are small states, and they're not especially gerrymandered. And so in states like that, you could argue that it makes some sense. They basically convert one of their electoral votes, one of their congressional districts is a swing district. So they get a little bit more attention, but they also have this potential that their votes could be broken up, which has happened a couple times over the last few elections. And so, you know, the state has a little bit less say in a certain sense, but gets a little more attention. And the legislatures have made that calculation. I don't think it would be a good idea in a bigger state, or a state that has a lot of gerrymandering, because, you know, you basically just divide up the votes, but you don't really get more attention, and you put a lot more right. Generate a lot more animosity around the whole process of drawing those district lines.
One of the things we do with the net. Go ahead.
It's a good example of the legitimate flexibility that the founders created, right? Whereas national popular vote is trying to use that flexibility to destroy the whole system.
One of the things we do at the Public Interest Legal Foundation is we fight for election integrity, and the places where there's real problems with elections are in the major big cities. And the national popular vote movement would push things into these big cities. Trent, listen, it's been great having you. Thank you very much for joining us, Trent England of Save Our States in Oklahoma. My name is J. Christian Adams. I am subbing for Sandy Rios in the morning this week. It's been great to be here. Thank you for all your calls. Sorry for those of you who are still on the line that we did not get to you. I will be here again tomorrow, and we will have an exciting guest to talk about impeachment. Joe DeGeneva is going to be joining the show tomorrow. And it is a wonderful week of Thanksgiving. Safe travels if you're traveling on the roads. Good cooking if you're in the kitchen, staying home. Thank you very much for joining me this hour. I'm J. Christian Adams in for Sandy Rios on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.